This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. Welcome to The Bigger Picture. I'm Troy Antic. On February 13 last year, Pastor Raymond Koh was taken by a group of men in Petaling Jaya. CCTV footage of the incident showed an operation that took 40 seconds involving at least 15 men and three black SUVs. In October, the Human Rights Commission of Malaysia, Suhakam, began its public inquiry into the disappearance of Koh and three others. However, the inquiry into Koh was stopped 2 weeks ago because of new developments on the case. And here to tell me more is lawyer Datuk Gudiel Singh Nija, who represented Koh's family at the inquiry. Datuk Gudiel, welcome.
Thank you.
What's the right word here? Is it kidnapping, abduction, disappearance?
It is kidnapping, involving the abduction of someone.
Okay.
So I think both those terms are acceptable. Kidnapping and abduction involves an active participation by someone in removing someone. Mm. Whereas disappearance can be someone just disappears, you know, someone decides to abscond to some place, or, you know, he loses his way and because of dementia sometimes, right, cannot find his way around. So that's a disappearance.
And this case has always been a kidnapping or abduction case. It was never a missing persons case.
Yes, ever since the video went viral, it was has been categorized as a case of kidnapping or abduction.
Mm-hmm. How soon after February 13 was the video? Did the video surface?
I think the video surfaced about a month or so after that.
Right.
The strange thing is that the police never found this video. It was the children, the very young children of Pastor Koh, who went around on their own effort a day after the incident and scouted around the houses, the residential homes, and then pleaded with those some of the homeowners whose CCTVs were pointing towards the road to secure the videos of the CCTVs. And they managed to get one from one of the cooperative homeowners. And then they had to send it to Singapore to have it transcribed. The strange thing is that the police never found these videos. It was the children of the Pastor Koh who triggered the finding of this.
We'll come back to some of the other findings from this inquiry. But the inquiry was stopped because of Section 12, Subsection 3 of the Human Rights Commission of Malaysia Act, and which says that the inquiry has to be stopped when the subject becomes a court case. And from an op-ed you've written, you disagree with this reason. Why is that?
First I must say that the panel involved in the inquiry have been doing a very commendable job. You know, they have persevered, they have been very open, very transparent, they have recognized the public interest element in this case, and even invited any members of the public who had inquiries to make in the course of the inquiry to raise those issues. So I must commend the panel for a job well done, proceeding well too. The only difference is that whether the inquiry should be stopped. My legal view is that the subject matter of the inquiry is governed by its terms of reference. And its terms of reference is to determine whether there are cases of enforced disappearances under the International Convention involved in this case. Now, the International Convention defines enforced disappearances as a case where the state could be complicit in the activity concern, in the abduction concern. So the question of whether a person abducted or not does not resolve this issue. And under Section 12.1, it says that it will stop the inquiry if the subject matter of any proceedings in the court is the same as the subject matter before the inquiry. Before the inquiry, it is the state complicit, regardless of who actually did the actual event itself. So legally speaking, the subject matter is different. It doesn't resolve this issue. Assuming, for example, a person is convicted, the question is, did the state have a hand in this disappearance? And that is the thrust of the terms of reference to ascertain whether or not there was enforced disappearance. So that is why we feel that the inquiry could actually go on, even on the terms of Section 12.1 of the Human Rights Commission Act.
was this decision solely at the discretion of the panel, the chair, or was it a consultation among lawyers involved?
Well, I mean, they were very open about it, the panel. We had a discussion. We gave our views. I think the panel was placed in a rather invidious position because, you know, the police, they want the police also to participate in these proceedings. And the police, on the day when they sent a letter, or the previous day they had sent a letter for the panel to consider on the date of the hearing itself, the continued hearing, the police themselves, these observers who were participating actively all the while, they themselves disappeared. They didn't attend. So without the cooperation of the police in this matter, the effect or the impact of the inquiry or the outcome of the inquiry will be seriously jeopardized. So I think the panel was placed in a rather difficult position because if they, it appears that in a letter that was written by the IGP, the police were of the view that the inquiry should be stopped. If the panel continued with this inquiry without the cooperation of the police, as they had, as they seem to have indicated by their conduct, then that would have made the inquiry a little difficult to complete, because the rest of the witnesses who are coming, the two critical witnesses who were to be called in the next 2 days, were both very senior police officers.
Even if that was not the case, what if what they found in the inquiry were to interfere with the... Isn't it likely that what they found could interfere with the court process?
I think you have to look at the whole thing holistically and cumulatively. You see, all the while, as far as Pastor Koh's case is concerned, there were actually various sort of acts by the police which suggested that they were not very happy either with the inquiry or with the thrust of the inquiry. First, they did not want to reveal any information on the ground. A lot of the information they withheld on the basis that this was still part of the investigations. Okay. Then there was an occasion during the inquiry when they started off the day's proceedings by accusing the lawyers for having misled the court and said that they wanted to open investigation papers to investigate the lawyers, that we had advanced some evidence which was fabricated. And we showed to the satisfaction of the panel that it was not so fabricated. It was based on police records that was presented, and they had to end up the day's objections that they had raised throughout the day apologizing to the lawyers. And then this was the third attempt. So it's kind of, if you look at it cumulatively, you find that there were things that we as lawyers were not very, our team of lawyers was not very happy with. And then as regards the charge that has been presented as well against this accused person, we had been informed by the IGP, or rather the panel had been informed, the inquiry had been informed by the IGP under oath, that they had carried out complete investigations against this particular accused person who's now accused of abducting Pastor Koh. And the investigations by the task force, special task force set up for the purpose, concluded that this particular accused person was not involved in the in the abduction at all. In fact, he was a kind of a trickster who was trying to take advantage of the news about Pastor Koh's disappearance to try to extort some money from the family by saying that he could provide them with information about his whereabouts. And the police then charged him for that offense of extorting money on false pretenses. So in the wake of all that, suddenly to say that he is responsible for the abduction doesn't square up with their own evidence that they had given under oath. The further point with regard to this is that their own evidence had pointed to various other areas of investigation which has nothing to do with this particular person. So when they, and they had all the while also kept the family informed of the progress of the investigations. But in this case, there was absolutely no information given to the police. The most significant thing is this particular person is charged under provision of the penal code, criminal law, which says that he wrongfully has abducted the body and wrongfully and secretly confined the body. But where then is the body? Because if that is the charge, then it means that they know that this person did secretly and wrongfully confine Pastor Koh in some place. But till to date, there is no information as regards Pastor Koh's whereabouts.
I think part of the reason why this was such a surprise is that it seemed for a long time there was no new development until this charge came about. Is it typical to expect police to update the public or the family how a case is developing?
I do not know whether it is typical. You know, I'm no part of the police proceedings. But in this case, the police personnel had been very cooperative and had kept the family informed at every stage and every progress. Even when there was no progress, they had updated the family about the fact that there was no progress and discussed this. Because this was a high-profile case, there was even an occasion when the IGP and very senior officers met with the family of Pastor Koh, especially at a hotel, to discuss this matter with them, to apprise them of the latest developments and the fact that to assuage their concerns relating to Pastor Koh's disappearance. So in the context of this case, they had been passing SMS messages and so on to the family, to suddenly spring this surprise at this particular late hour when we were about to call a very critical witness, two very critical witnesses. One was a very high-ranking deputy commissioner of police, who evidence had shown through press cuttings, had indicated to NGOs, certain NGOs, that just demonstrating by itself in a case which involved Christianization of Muslims was a weak effort, and had suggested that they should pursue other means. This is a very telling piece of evidence in the context of the terms of reference and forced disappearance in respect of the inquiry. Another witness was who would have given us technical information on the CCTVs, because CCTVs would have shown there are several CCTVs that lined what we allege is the abduction route. Now, almost all of the relevant, the critical CCTVs, evidence produced by the police showed, were defective. So the best person to have asked would be the technical police officer who's in charge of this. Now, he also was about to give evidence when this inquiry was called off.
I'm speaking today to lawyer Dato Gudiel Singh Nija about the Suhakam inquiry into Pastor Koh's kidnapping, which was halted 2 weeks ago. After the break, I'll ask Gudiel more about what we've learned from the inquiry thus far and how it might proceed going forward. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. Welcome back. You're listening to The Bigger Picture. I'm Troy Antik. My guest today is lawyer Dato Gudiel Singh Nija. He represented Pastor Raymond Koh's family during the Suhakam inquiry into Koh's disappearance. Dr. Gudiel, you mentioned why one of the witnesses that was about to be called was someone from the police who was about to give a very telling evidence about which theories to investigate. Why was his testimony telling?
Well, because in our view, we wanted to ascertain from him once and for all whether or not he made that particular statement that has been attributed to him through press reports. Namely, him urging NGOs, or perhaps not urging, but telling NGOs that they should do more than just demonstrate in cases where there was a need to check the Christianization of Muslims. We wanted to ascertain the truth of this from him. He would be the best person. And he would also provide, if it is established one way or the other, whether or not there was a link with authorities with regard to action taken with regard to the abduction of Pastor Koh. Because if indeed what was said was true, then it would have cast some increasing light on the reason for the abduction. So that's why his evidence is very crucial. Also very crucial would have been the evidence of the technical police officer in charge of the CCTV, because he would have shown why the CCTVs were not working, how is it that all these critical CCTVs suddenly went blank, and why the CCTVs couldn't record adequately or at all.
It went blank?
There's no picture. Why
for that short period of time?
That's why we wanted to ascertain from the CCTV exactly. And there was another police witness who told us that the best person would be this technical officer. So his evidence would have been very critical to ascertaining why the CCTVs were not working and why there was one CCTV that was working, why it could not record adequately the faces of the persons in the SUVs, assuming that they took the route that we think they took.
Was there a reason why these two witnesses were not caught earlier? Was it just a matter of scheduling?
I think it was a matter of scheduling, because they go by the order of the way in which the trial unfolds or the inquiry unfolded. And so first, of course, you have to establish the CCTVs, what was happening to the CCTVs before we can ask any technical officer. And the Deputy Commissioner of Police, also we have to establish the prior facts in relation to the press reports. When this press report was presented to the IGP, the IGP said, well, it could be true, it could be false. You got to establish its truth, its veracity. And so in this normal sequence of events, I think the calling of witnesses was quite correct in that order.
And so, to the best of your knowledge, what were the theories that the police were pursuing since the report was made by Pastor Koh's family?
You see, this is very strange. As it unfolded in the inquiry, there was evidence presented that it could possibly relate to some the acts of some drug traffickers in the north of Malaysia. One set of police officers suggested that that was an active line that should be pursued, and yet another, who were involved in the task force, said they pursued that line and found that there was absolutely no basis for that at all. But there were still some very strange pieces of evidence that remains unexplained until today. It was suggested that the number plate of the Pastor Koh's car was found in the house of the drug trafficker in Perak. But you always have to make a list of things you seize. In the first list of the things seized, the number plate did not appear. Many other things appeared at all. Yet there was evidence that this number plate was recovered. And it was suggested that this number plate was recovered later because they did not focus on the fact of Pastor Koh's abduction. And then there was also a case of a person who was said to have received a phone call and was asked to go to Hajai, I think it was, some part of southern Thailand. That evidence also was actively given at one stage in the course of the investigation, not in the course of the inquiry. But when this particular person was called, he said that there was no relationship to the abduction at all. So we feel there were a lot of red herrings in the way of the of seeking an explanation to these abductions and this Pastor Koh's disappearance. And that intrigues us even more in the need to establish the truth through cross-examination of witnesses or through examination of witnesses becomes very critical.
And so it was never explained how these evidence Because from press reports, they found a picture of Pastor Koh himself, a picture of his house. And these were not explained with no understanding of why he was there.
Yes, until today, there's no explanation. In fact, when the head of the task force was asked and other police officers were asked, they said that the person who in whose house this was found has absolutely no connection with Pastor Koh's disappearance. So how did this, how come this picture of Pastor Koh and the number plate of his car was found in a house in respect of whom or in respect of which there is no evidence of any wrongdoing in relation to Pastor Koh? Mm-hmm. These are very intriguing questions that require some answers. I think up to this point, the police have not been able to provide a satisfactory answer, at least from our point of view.
I want to come back to the terms of reference of this inquiry, and it's to examine whether, or try to answer whether or not this is a case of enforced disappearance, and whether the state was complicit in the abduction. Can you explain what that means? Because in the case of kidnapping, how did this, why did this inquiry arise to investigate whether or not the state was complicit in this kidnapping?
Well, I mean, the fact of the matter is that Pastor Koh disappeared or was abducted. The police had no information. The children brought forth these videos. And the crucial evidence was provided by the these videos, which went viral. There were three SUVs involved. In a matter of swift seconds, a person was abducted in the early hours of the morning from a residential area frequented by members of the public. And there was a witness, a chambering student, a chambering law student, who actually witnessed this. So this, the way in which the operation was done, and this is in evidence when I inquired of the IGP in the course of the inquiry, that this was very meticulously done. This operation was very well executed. The persons who, there were 10, 15 people involved, and they were all in balaclavas, black clad uniforms, complete from head to toe. We produced evidence to show that in another abduction inquiry, in another clear abduction case in Terengganu, there was a similar sort of operation, and that was clearly done by the police. And now, again, there is the inquiry is proceeding with regard to Amri, where it appears that a similar kind of operation was done. So you see, these are things that are not usually, according to our perhaps, according to our observation, or according to our understanding, is not something that is done by ordinary people or even gangsters, something executed so professionally, agreed to by all parties that it is very well executed in a matter of seconds. And then the police were unable to provide any answer, despite the fact that they can solve a lot of other problems, in very fast, commendably so. But for this, there was no answer at all. And it's overlain by the fact that the Pastor Koh and his family had been subjected, or at least the Pastor Koh had been subjected to some threats before in relation to his activities of proselytizing Muslims. So when you look at the cumulative picture that is painted, it does give rise to some concern that there is more to it than meets the eye. That is not just some criminal gang which, wanted to kidnap him for ransom or whatever. And therefore, when as matters dragged by and there was no real answer coming forth from the police and there was no result from the investigations, it prompted the family to seek to go elsewhere for help. And I think it was quite natural for them to turn to Sohakam because Sohakam has a established and credible reputation for looking into human rights abuses.
From what I've read, the former IGP, Tan Sri Khalid Abubakar, he has admitted in the inquiry that there were lapses in the police investigation process. Was that right?
Yes, he made it very clear that there were lapses. You know, there was a long time frame from the time the complaint was lodged of someone having witnessed the abduction to the time that police then took measures or acted. In these kind of cases, of course, when there is a report is a godsend almost, because, you know, someone has reported they saw something happening. They had phoned up, they had gone to the police station, but there was a lack of an immediate moving into action by the police. After the IGP gave evidence, the police then came to explain that they had actually acted quite swiftly and so on. But, you know, in the context of what the IGP told us, or told the inquiry rather, there are some question marks that still remain as to the fact that they were dilatory in a situation which required prompt and immediate urgent action.
Going forward, this person that has been accused, is he being charged for extortion and now under the penal code?
Yes. In fact, his extortion is proceeding.
Right.
So, for a start, you know, I don't know what the police authorities are going to do, the prosecution authorities are going to do, because, you know, they are clearly inconsistent charges. One is to say he was bluffing, in short, to try and extort money, saying he knew where Pastor Ko was, and they established that he knew nothing about Pastor Ko. And the other one is saying that he has actually secretly and wrongfully confined Pastor Ko somewhere.
Yeah.
I don't know how they're going to proceed, because the other case is still proceeding. The extortion case is still proceeding.
So what is the timeline for this? How would it unravel?
I don't know. I don't know what the police intend to do. They can't, for a start, they can't, you know, they can't proceed with two parallel cases at the same time, which are clearly in conflict with each other. So they will have to decide one way or the other. And if indeed the section, the present charge under section 365 of the Penal Code is to stick, they'll have to produce the body of Pastor Ko and show where he is, and which means they know where his body is. So why is there no disclosure of this fact, at least to the family, if not to the rest of the world?
Why was this charge different from extortion? Because he was already charged in court. Why wasn't inquiry halted then?
No, because extortion is because he knows nothing about this abduction.
Okay, yes. What role can the inquiry, if for any reason the charge for this latest charge was dropped, can the inquiry resume?
Well, actually, if it is dropped, we've got to see what the reason for the dropping is. And then perhaps they can resume. But there are two things that I want to point out. The first is that we have asked to make an oral submission, perhaps even written submission, to the panel to urge them to continue with the inquiry on the basis of the fact that the subject matter is different, as I explained earlier. And also that in the context of considering the evidence as a whole, there are unsatisfactory features which suggest that perhaps this charge needs, the fact of the charge being brought at this late hour and when there is a subsisting extortion charge persisting against this person, that there are circumstances which suggest that the inquiry should go on. We hope to... In other words, we are saying there is a question of bona fides involved in the prosecution, in the bringing of this new charge. And we hope to be able to persuade the inquiry to proceed with this matter. That's the first point. The second point is, in any event, after the inquiry with regard to Amri, the second person who was, the other person who was abducted, is still proceeding, as will the inquiry against Joshua and Ruth Hilmi. At the end of the day, I think we wish to make a submission that considering the evidence that has been given thus far of Pastor Koh, taken together with the evidence of the other two missing persons or abductions, that there is, in fact, a case to consider, a possible case for the panel to reflect on in the context of their terms of reference, which is whether there is enforced disappearance as defined under the International Convention.
The Commission's Chairman, Tan Sri Razali, has said that he hoped to play a constructive role in the trial. Is this consistent with what you were saying?
Well, I think the in fairness to the chairman and also the panel in this inquiry, I think they have made a serious commitment to proceed with this inquiry when they initiated it, and then are still continuing with the second and third aspects of this inquiry with regard to the other persons. So I think the credibility and integrity of the commission and its panel and the chairman remains completely intact. It's just that we take a different view in the context, as I said, of the case and of the terms of reference that they should continue with this inquiry. Or at the end of the day, also take into account the evidence that has been adduced up to this point or up to the point when the inquiry was stopped, because there was a huge amount of evidence that we have adduced as to how the abduction was done and the circumstances and the parallel with other kind of police acts of abducting or, you know, extracting people from situations. So in the context as a whole, we would be urging the panel of inquiry at the end of the day to take into account these matters, including those in relation to Pastor Koh.
What's the timeline for when the inquiry will go on with regards to Amri and Joshua and Ruth?
Well, Amri is going on being, even as we speak now, it is being carried on, almost a weekly basis, depending upon the available dates. And after that, the inquiry against the other two, Hilmis, Joshua and Ruth Hilmi, will proceed. We don't know how long it'll take. And we also are watching very closely the trial of the accused person in the Pastor Koh's case.
Do we know when that's going to trial?
We are in touch with the lawyers, who, by the way, have also been very surprised that their client is now being charged for this offense. Shocked, actually. We are in touch with them, and we will be... The trial is not scheduled to start immediately, but we will be watching it very closely, monitoring it rather very closely.
Thank you very much for being here.
Thank you.
I've been speaking to Dato' Gudiel Singh Nija, who is a lawyer representing the Koh family at the Suakam public inquiry into the disappearance of Pastor Raymond Koh, Che Amri, as well as Joshua Hilmi and Ruth Hilmi. You've been listening to The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.